Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. Coming to you today from a glorious sunny afternoon in Vancouver, but we'll be reaching across the globe in South Australia. I have the opportunity to speak with Sean Prentice, who's a graduate student working on both a PhD and a master's at the University of Adelaide School of Psychology. And he's also the research support officer at GPEX in South Australia, the GP Training Institute. And his co-author, Lambert Shuworth, director of the Flinders Health and Medical Research Institute, Prideaux, at Flinders University. The two of them are co-authors, along with Emily Kirkpatrick and Jill Benson, of a paper entitled Workplace-Based Assessments in Postgraduate Medical Education, a Hermeneutic Review, that will come out in the November 2020 issue of Medical Education. That was a mouthful, just getting through introductions for the two of you. I hope I got everything right. I appreciate you taking the time to chat. It's an interesting paper and a very hot and important topic. Workplace-based assessments, as most people listening to this will know, have become very central to our field. I often think about them as the final frontier as we've started moving closer and closer to authentic contexts. Can I ask one of you to start by just explaining, again, given how well-established these have become at this point, why you felt a hermeneutic review of this sort was needed at this point in time?
Thanks, Kevin. So as the background to this, we were at GPEX awarded a grant by the College of GPs in Australia that was also supported by funding from the Australian government to develop a framework of workplace-based assessments in the Australian general practice training context. And so that grant was led by Jill Benson, one of the co-authors on this paper. And to start that, we needed to have a literature review that was really exploring workplace-based assessments. And Lambert, as the lead academic on this project, was indicating that a lot of the research so far had focused on workplace-based assessments in a fairly linear perspective, or was predominantly focusing on the tools themselves. And part of the issue that arose there was that there wasn't so much of a focus on the complex interactions that arise between the users, the tools, and the context. So we wanted to explore what the literature was saying about that some more to try and inform this broader framework. And we chose the methodology of a hermeneutic review, as you mentioned. And the reason for that was it provides a very iterative method of approaching the literature to really grapple with the issues in a lot of depth and also be quite agile and reactive to the content that was arising from the literature and to see where it takes us, which is then how we came to produce the paper that's now going to be published.
And hermeneutic is a term that I'm sure will be unfamiliar to many of those who are listening. Can I ask maybe you, Lambert, this time to explain to others what that means in this context?
Yes, thank you, Kevin. Most reviews try to cover what's out there in the literature in a comprehensive way, but sometimes you want to address different types of questions. So what you basically do with a hermeneutic review is you approach the literature as if you were doing a qualitative study with structured interviews. But instead of interrogating people, you interrogate the literature. So we started with a set of questions that we wanted to have answers to. And these are questions very much focused on what Sean already said, is how does the instrument interact with the users in their specific context. And we started with an initial set of questions, and then we started reading the literature and collecting perspectives and views and answers until we reached saturation. And saturation is, well, in the first cycle, the reading of the literature helped us to refine, to add sub-questions to make sure that we reached saturation on what type of questions we wanted to ask and that we had all the questions there that we really needed an answer to. And then we continued reading the literature and iteratively discussing the literature so that we got as many perspectives, as many views, as many different hues of perspectives on all the questions so that we could write a story about this is what the literature says, and these are all the different views related to the questions. It is a methodology which is gaining ground in medical education, but it has been used in other social sciences for a very long time. And actually, it's being increasingly used in clinical research as well.
Well, and so unlike with a systematic review where you might have a very narrow and precise question and have very tight inclusion-exclusion criteria, how does one go about determining what papers to include in the sort of iterative cycles that you were just describing?
So my background was in systematic reviews and meta-analyses. So the way that we approached this initially was to try and get a reasonably systematic search of the literature, which we then imported into our reference software, and then looked through all the citations as you would in a systematic review to identify which were relevant to the sort of questions we wanted to answer versus those that weren't. And then of those that were relevant, I categorized them into folders about which questions potentially were they addressing. And from that, I came up with a short list of 10 articles that seemed to be providing slightly different perspectives and covering multiple questions to try and get a good overview of what the key principles were in the literature. And so based on that, we were then able to identify what the key areas were, how the themes were emerging from those, which then informed the next round of what articles we needed to select to address the gaps that we were identifying.
And I think I can fairly say there's never been an assessment process developed that was seen universally favorably. There are a lot of complaints that come out quite reflexively about workplace-based assessments in different contexts. Did you gain any insight into what's driving those negative perceptions and, by extension of that, how we can overcome them to ensure that these tools are used more productively?
If I can make a start with that, if you take the history of assessment, you see a development where originally the assumption was that assessment was a measurement process and that you could actually summarize competence in a single number or a small set of numbers. There's gradually been a move towards that assessment is basically a judgment and basically a narrative. And I think that transition is taking place in workplace-based assessment. So in the early days of workplace-based assessment, the focus was still very much on the measurement. It was very much on trying to capture it as a number. The original mini-CX papers were generalizability studies and what have you. But gradually, and much of the work that your fellow Canadians like Shipra, Ginsberg, and Andrea Gingrich, etc., have done, they've looked at, wow, it's basically a supported judgment, and it's a human judgment, and it's a shared narrative that we have about what constitutes competence in our context. And that led us to look at how that interaction works, because it is the adaptability to your local context. But the original idea was that you could simply take something that works in one context and transplant it into a different context and with different complexities and different factors. And that's not the case. Well, when it doesn't work, then people get disappointed.
Well, let me ask maybe Sean to elaborate on that in terms of what are some of the contextual variables that you identified that people should be paying attention to when trying to figure out how to adapt these experiences of others to their own environment.
Sure. So a lot of the focus on what was affecting the variables in the literature was very much on the users, so the assessors and the trainees. And so the factors that come into play here are the assessor's cognitive frame of reference. So how are they making a judgment about the trainee's level of competence? The trainee's motivations. So are they trying to focus on getting a high score, if you will, or perform well on the assessment? In terms of the contextual variables, a lot of the focus was on, one, the actual environment in which the WBA was occurring, and second, the sort of culture that was surrounding the way in which it was working. So first, in terms of the environment, there was reference made to the actual physical environment, how busy the context was. And if it's a highly busy workplace, then the workplace-based assessment can be seen as an onerous burden. And so there is the emphasis on trying to complete it as quickly as possible to get back to the important work that's being done. And of course, in doing it in a hurriedly fashion, it means that it's not being done as appropriately as it ideally would be, which compromises the quality. Another factor in terms of the environment was in the delivery of feedback.
So if the feedback is being delivered in an open setting, this can really impact both the assessor's desire to be open and frank, but also the trainee's willingness to engage with that feedback and grapple with it some more. So there are very much environmental factors that play into this. There's also the cultural factors, though. So again, this is talking about issues such as the assessment of versus assessment for learning culture that the organisation may have. And that, again, affects how everyone approaches, how the assessment is completed, and then what is actually done with the information that comes out of the assessment at the end.
And Lambert, that reminds me of some of the extensive thinking you've done in terms of how to embed assessment tools or practices in a broader system or a program of assessment. And so it makes me wonder if you've generated any new insights through this particular exercise that helps you think better or differently about how to effectively embed workplace-based assessments into a bigger system.
Yes, what it made me realize is how dominant the impact of organizational culture is. And what I've learned from it is that we've been focusing on assessment still from that measurement perspective or that objectivity perspective, but it basically comes down to fairness. And a very important point in observed fairness and true fairness of assessment lies in the interaction. It made me realize even more stronger how good assessment is an interaction between the learner and their examiner or supervisor or coach and what have you, which is only mediated by the instrument. Where in the past we've always looked at the characteristics of the instrument, is the instrument valid? We now understand much better that validity is an interplay between stakeholders using the instrument within a certain context. I know that sounds complex, and I must say it is complex. And that's why it's incredibly important to ensure that you understand how these factors interplay with each other so that you can actually optimize them for your own situation. It sounds like an open door when I'm saying it, but it was actually quite an aha moment for me during this study.
No, not at all. I think it does sound like quite an important lesson and starts to shape people towards hopefully thinking about what is their context and how's it going to interact with the users and the tools as you described. I would often wrap up one of these conversations by asking people to take that lesson and offer the best advice they would give to those who are looking to operationalize an assessment process like this. In this case, you have 12 lessons that you've learned that you nicely outline in the discussion itself that'll provide some very practical guidance. So maybe, Sean, rather than asking you to recite all 12, I'll just ask you to wrap up by saying if there were one or two things that you really hope people will take away from reading this article, what would they be?
Sure. I think it's reiterating what Lambert has said, that validity of a workplace-based assessment can't be seen as purely the properties of the tool itself. It's how the tool is used, it's where the tool is used, it's by whom the tool is used. And so I think if people can start to shift their focus from looking at purely the psychometric properties of the tool in a classic sense to looking at more how the tool can be used in a given context to optimize it for that context, what are the broader psychological and social factors that need to be considered to try and optimise the use of workplace-based assessments? I think that will provide quite a nice shift in the way that we think about these sort of assessments to try and make them more meaningful. And at the end of the day, providing better quality feedback that trainees are willing to take on. And so in that spirit, I think probably the key lesson that's come out from me is lesson number one, which is trying to instigate some sort of distinction between the formative and the summative workplace-based assessments. And as we acknowledge in the paper, this is an issue in terms of feasibility to try and accomplish this, but it's come up as one of the most dominant themes in the literature, that this tension that exists between formative and summative workplace-based assessments can considerably compromise the quality of the process. So they're probably the two key things that I'd like people to really take away from the paper.
Yeah, and certainly gets at the key aspect as well of the role of the user in this, and that I imagine that speaks very directly to just how important it is to get people engaged with their assessments and ensure that they're not just these tack-ons that people are blithely filling out and moving on from because they just don't see the point. So they're avoiding opening up a whole other conversation just as we're trying to wrap up. I think I will leave it at that and will strongly recommend anybody listening to this to go and read up on the additional lessons that your group has embedded in the paper, because I think they're very highly relevant, not just for workplace-based assessment, but helping us think about assessment practices more wisely in general. So congratulations. It's a very important piece of work, and I look forward to seeing how this evolves. Those who do want those details I was just alluding to will find it again in the November 2020 issue of Medical Education under a paper entitled Workplace-Based Assessments in Postgraduate Medical Education, a Herman Udick Review, with the authors that you've been listening to of Sean Prentice and Lambert Shuerth. Thank you both again for your time and your insights.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.